TheBook.com.
Hello once again, everybody, and thank you for joining me here on this Thursday, September 19th edition of Bang the Book Radio. My name is Adam Burke, your host for the next hour and 5 hour and 10 minutes or so. We're going to go over all kinds of things in the world of sports from a betting focus. Happy to have you with me as we welcome the return of football here tonight. Thursday night, Houston and Tulane in college football, NFL, Titans, Jaguars. We're going to talk about those at the tail end of the show today when I finish things up on my own. But we'll start with our first and only guest of the program today. That is professional handicapper Brad Powers over at bradpowersports.com. 15 college football games that we'll try and decipher what's going on here this weekend in the NFL. Over at bangthebook.com, we are your one-stop shop for sports betting news and information. Trying to do the same thing over there, bring you lots of thoughts on the college football card, lots of thoughts on the NFL card as well, in particular with Danny Vorks' NFL power ratings and his suggested picks for this week. Also, have my college football power ratings posted over there every Monday as well. We're starting to roll in our picks for this week from Admir Aljic and Alan Moody. Jonathan Willis will have some FCS stuff for us this weekend. And, of course, we still have NASCAR playoffs, WNBA playoffs. You've got Major League Baseball still going on here. We'll start rolling out some NHL and some NBA content here in the very near future as well. So make sure you keep it tuned to bangthebook.com. As you know, this and every edition of Bang the Book Radio, presented by our friends over at DSI Sportsbook. BTB, the number 200, is that promo code. 100% deposit match bonus for the sportsbook. 100% deposit match bonus for the live casino at BetDSI. It's only a game until you bet it. Lots to get to, so we won't waste any more time here today as we bring on professional handicapper Brad Powers from BradPowersSports.com. Brad, how's it going today, man?
Matt's going well. How you doing on this fine Thursday?
Doing well, buddy. Appreciate your time as always, man. Thank you so much for joining us. And look, let's go ahead and dive right in. You know, we've obviously all been making adjustments. It's week four of the college football season. We've got some data points, and we'll talk about some of those adjustments and a lot of these teams here as we go along. But let's go ahead and start on Friday night, because I think this is a fascinating game and one where adjustments, you know, have certainly had to be made with at least one of these teams. Utah and USC out in L.A., the Utes, a 3.5-point favorite. Some of the more public shops out there dealing -4 on Utah. How are you seeing this Friday night Pac-12 after dark game?
Well, I mean, I'll be a little square. Even though my power rankings only say Utah 2, I just think, you know, traditionally speaking, Utah has been a bad matchup for USC. I mean, the you look at the last 10 meetings, the Utes are 7-2-1 against the spread. And, you know, for me, there's always a worry if things go bad early for USC, if there's a compounding effect with them, with Clay Helton on the hot seat. And I mean, you're talking a true freshman quarterback in Keaton Slovis, you know, struggled last week against BYU, 3 interceptions, and now he faces an even more talented defense. And if Clay Helton isn't going to out athlete Utah, and when Clay Helton, you know, has to draw him up, and it's X's and O's. And what I mean by that is when Clay Helton's an underdog, and he can't just, you know, go out there and roll out his superior talent. Clay Helton for USC is 1-12 straight up, 2-11 against the spread as an underdog, failing to cover by 10 points per game. You add all that in, that overcomes my just initial starting power rating point to this handicap. I'm on Utah here.
It's an interesting game for a variety of different reasons. As you mentioned, I mean, the fact that the talent gap is as small as it is here between USC and Utah, very problematic for the Trojans. That's something that they absolutely need to fix, something Urban Meyer can fix next year when he's the head coach at USC. But in this game specifically here, the thing that kind of worries me a little bit for Utah, and maybe USC is a decent first half play, or if you've got a sports book that offers first quarter lines for college, Utah, you know, they played BYU in week one, the Holy War rivalry game. Didn't look all that great in that game, by the way. Then they played Northern Illinois and Idaho State. At least USC has been playing good teams. So what does worry me a little bit here on the Utah side is if they're going to be ready from the opening kickoff for this game, doesn't seem like that's much of a concern for you.
No, I mean, because, I mean, this is where it, sometimes it's more art than science. I mean, on one hand, oh, Utah really hasn't played anybody. But on the other hand, I'll say this, on a short week, would I rather have played a physical game against BYU and then coming back on a short week, or would I rather, you know, been game planning for SC last week instead, you know, and playing Idaho State? So, again, that's why there's always two sides to a handicap. I'm not as concerned. I'll tell you this. Here's my concern. If we look at the common opponent, BYU, and we just look at that game, Utah was +3 in turnovers in that game against BYU. USC was -3 in turnovers against BYU. That 6-turnover difference, I think, can skew, obviously, not only skew the final scores, but the stats a little bit there. So that would be my biggest concern in backing the Utes here.
Well, and not to go down a rabbit hole with this, but, you know, that's something that you do over the course of the season. You regrade performances. And, you know, that's something I think is very important, because a win in week one may not mean nearly as much as it does a little bit further down the line here. I mean, looking at tonight's game specifically with Houston and Tulane, we were all very impressed with what Tulane did in week one against FIU. FIU looks terrible so far this season.
Yeah.
We'll talk about them here in a second. But that's one of the things I think is one of your strongest assets and why you get better as the season goes along. You regrade what those wins mean, taking into account, you know, how those teams have fared. Also, you know, turnover margin discrepancies and stuff like that. It's very important for our listeners to, they're not going to do it to the degree that you do, but at least try and keep it in mind throughout the year.
Absolutely. And now we're getting to that point where, you know, this is week four. And I think usually I try to do it every couple weeks a lot of times, or at least every couple weeks in the games that, you know, my power ratings are substantially off. Because as we get through the season, my power ratings shouldn't be that far off from the market. I mean, sometimes I like it. I prefer it because that equals bets. I mean, if my numbers match the market, how could I bet? But I think I do it every couple weeks. But I think a good – for anyone out there listening that wants to do this themselves, I think once a month, and I think coming at the end of September here, whether it be – you know, this upcoming week or next week, you know, regrading a lot of them. I know it requires some work, some extra work, but I think that certainly helps your power rings because, I mean, let's face it, teams that we thought were good coming into the season are bad. I mean, those narratives could have changed, and however you graded those week one and two performances, sometimes you got to go back through them because that can skew your power ratings on a team as the season goes along.
So as we move to game 307-308 here, FIU and Louisiana Tech, I think both of these teams have been a little bit disappointing here so far this season, but FIU certainly stands out between the two of them. That week one blowout against Tulane that we just mentioned, then they lose to Western Kentucky and really didn't do much offensively at all whatsoever in that game. Struggled last week with New Hampshire from the FCS ranks, and yet this line's down from 10 to 7. So what do you think about this line move?
I agree with the move. I got La Tech 7 here, so maybe I'm still a little too high on FIU, but I think it's I'm all right with it. Looking at, you know, FIU's performance, I got them down like 5 points since the start of the season, so I think that's very fair. And then looking at Louisiana Tech, I got them down slightly. I think that the really bad performance Louisiana Tech had was against Grambling. They could have actually lost it, but other than that, I mean, obviously they went on their own, crushed Bowling Green last week. You know, turnovers were an issue against Texas, so I'm a little bit down on La Tech, but not too much. But I think the number, I agree with the line movement here, and I know there's an issue with, you know, James Morgan, the quarterback for FIU. I'll say Wiggins, the quarterback who replaced him last week, was actually pretty decent against New Hampshire. I mean, he ran for 187 yards and a couple of touchdowns. He gives him a different dynamic out of the backfield, so yeah, I think number's fair. No bet for me, really. I agree with the move.
So my number on this game is 10. So I was on the opener. Your number on this game is 7, so it's where it currently is. Let's say that this is a situation that, you know, somebody else out there, one of our listeners, is facing. Maybe their number is 9.5, 10.5, something like that. So you hit the opener, but then the line moves down to where you have it, and I think a lot of people certainly respect your opinion. How do I handle that situation going forward? What do you think I should do?
That's a good point. Well, I mean, traditionally speaking, you would want to, you know, if you really feel confident about your power rating on that specific team, you would hope that you hit the opener when it was 3 points away from your number, especially when you're dealing around key numbers. Now, I mean, 10's not as key as 3 or 7, but, I mean, you make the initial bet, and then if the market agrees with you and goes down to your number, 3 points through that corridor isn't enough for me to you know, hedge my bet, so to say. I mean, unless you're really doing this professionally, but as far as being like a public handicapper, now I would sit tight with my original bet and be happy that the market moved in your direction. You could feel a little bit more confident on where you have these two teams power rated.
All right, so move to the next game here. Another line move down to the key number of 7. Air Force and Boise State up on the Smurf Turf in Boise. And this is an interesting one. You know, you talk about Utah not really playing anybody last week, playing Idaho State. Similar situation here where Boise State played Portland State last week. Air Force, the emotional win over something of a big brother there in Colorado with the overtime victory, should have come easier than it did. So what do you think about this one and this line move in particular?
I don't agree with it. I have Boise State 11. So, and keep in mind, I'm not anti-Air Force. I was on Air Force last week against Colorado, and I got Air Force up, you know, about 3 points, and they've only played a couple games. So, I mean, it's looked good. And I think my power rating for Boise State's completely fair. I only got them up a point. So, I don't agree with the line move here. I'm going to talk myself probably into a decent bet on Boise State. I get it that they've struggled with Air Force in the past, matchup-wise. Looking at it, and I get it that also Boise hasn't been great as a home favorite, 6-17 against a number. As a home favorite, Air Force is good as a dog, 15-5 against the number. I mean, despite all those, despite the moves, I mean, this is just too much of an overreaction. I think the last week, I mean, a short week after a big rivalry win. I mean, they really celebrated that win Air Force did last week. Boise State, I mean, look, when you're playing Portland State, you're probably sneaking in some extra prep time on the option for the following week. So I think that's the case here. I'll take Boise State.
Here's my question, because my number's up in the 12-12.5 range. So I agree with you that my number's definitely higher than what the market has. Is this the stopping point? Do you think you and I can actually – you know, sneak out a 6.5 here, or do you feel like this is probably it for this number?
Ooh. Good call. I mean, looking at Pinnacle, they're dealing, you know, reduced juice on the 7. So, it'd be tough to see it. Yeah, I don't expect – I think this is where it stops. It has to. I'll post my ticket on Twitter.
Well, yeah. And like you said, I mean, there's this anti-Boise State at home narrative that – maybe a little bit of a driving force for this line move down. Again, the concern that I talked about earlier on in the week when we discussed this game, will Boise State's offense be efficient enough to maximize its possessions and get some margin in this game? If Bachmeier is solid, if the running game is solid, I agree with, you know, taking the 7 here. Again, a big if, but you know, this is one of those spots where I'll probably end up trusting my power rating and just kind of seeing where this game goes. All right, we'll take a big leap down the board here to a game by listener request, Western Michigan and Syracuse, game 339-340. Syracuse a 4.5 or 5-point favorite, but this one did get all the way up to 6.5 in some places over the course of the week before coming back down.
Yeah, I bet it actually earlier in the week at the 5 number. I was happy that it moved in that direction then, but now we're seeing some money come back in, like you mentioned, on Western. I mean, I got it at 7, and look, it's not like I'm high on Syracuse, or maybe I am too high on them. I didn't think I was high on them coming into the season. I didn't have them in my top 25 like a preseason AP poll did, and I got them down 5 full points since the start of the season, so I thought that's fair. And I got Western Michigan up a couple points, even though, you know, they got, you know, one average data point, in my opinion, that was the opener against an FCS team. I think a bad performance against Michigan State, getting blown out by that Spartan team and giving up that many points. And last week, a really good, I would say, data point. And it's interesting because, again, this is why I say this at least once a week, I think. But intriguing to me that, Western Michigan had a lot of money go against them last week in that Georgia State game. That line dropped 2.5, 3 points. I didn't understand it. My numbers were much higher on Western Michigan, and obviously I ended up being correct with their blowout win over Georgia State, but now money coming in on Western. So, I mean, even though we're into week 4 here, I'm not seeing, you know, some correlation here with, hey, this team's getting money bet on them each and every week. This hasn't been the case. I think Syracuse is in need of a feel-good kind of win, or at least just a win after back-to-back blowout losses. Now, I like the orange here.
This is such a hard handicap because, I mean, look, Clemson is elite. They're, you know, number 1 or number 2 in everybody's power ratings. So I'm not worried about what happened last week for Syracuse. Getting trucked by Maryland was a very bad look. Then Maryland goes and loses to Temple last week. Shutting out Liberty you know, okay, that's cool. Shutting out Liberty is great. And then Liberty, you know, figures it out last week with a big win. But Syracuse only had 24 points in that game. Western Michigan, three very different games for them, like you said. An FCS game, the blowout loss to Big Brother, and then the blowout win over Georgia State. These teams are inconsistent, and their opponents have been very inconsistent. So I have no idea where these two teams are. I'm just happy that I'm right on the number of five, and I don't have to bet this game.
There you go. Yeah, I mean, even though I bet Syracuse early in the week, I mean, if you're asking me now, we're coming towards the end of the week. I mean, is the Orange one of my top plays of the week? They're not. I mean, in fact, in my newsletter that got released yesterday, you know, I give out five college picks. Even though I liked and bet Orange, the Orange earlier in the week at that number, I'm not as confident in it. Because, I mean, sometimes you look at the market and see where it's at, and then, I mean, you get a feel for when you've been in the industry for a long time, you start getting feel for games, and I'm kind of with you there, buddy. I mean, I certainly still lean Syracuse, but I'm not feeling that the vibes that I did when I saw the initial numbers on Sunday afternoon.
Well, and again, I mean, that speaks to the difference between betting and handicapping. Betting, you're trying to get out in front of the number, expecting, you know, five to be good because it's going to go up towards seven, potentially maybe it comes to 7.5. And then as you handicap the game, not only does the line come back down to where it was, but also you don't love it as much. So you know, you try to get out in front of a line move, hope your ticket is good. If it winds up not being good, well, then you adjust the following week and don't get burned on Syracuse, you know, or Western Michigan going forward. How about game 345, 346? Not a game that most shows are going to talk about, but those are the games I love to talk about on the show. Toledo and Colorado State. Colin Hill, third torn ACL for Colorado State. Definitely best wishes to him. Absolutely brutal to hear that news. But that was baked into the number already here. So the move up from 8 to 9 or 9.5 is just that somebody out there likes Toledo.
Yeah, a little too much in my opinion. I mean, what has Toledo done? I mean, kind of met well, I'll say this. I just got done saying a couple handicaps ago, where's the market going? I mean, Toledo took a lot of money in the opener against Kentucky. That line came down. Then Toledo was on a bye, so you kind of forgot about him. And then Toledo played an FCS school in Murray State last week, so you couldn't get a good feel. So now this is really the second data point we have with Toledo, and the money is really coming in on the Rockets. So, yeah, there has to be a betting syndicate out there that really likes them. I don't as much, and nothing. It's not because I went to Bowling Green. It's just their arch rival. But in this instance, I mean, I wasn't particularly overwhelmed with what I saw, even in the Murray State game. Murray State, you know, if you go back to that game, they missed a couple field goals. They were -2 in turnovers. They were stopped on downs three times in Toledo territory. So that 45-0 win over Murray State last week wasn't overly impressive. I mean, and you go back to the Colorado State game. I get it. Colin Hill's a big blow. Even Mike Bobo even said it. But, I mean, that one was a little bit of a misleading final against Arkansas last week. 10 minutes left in the game. It's 34-34. I mean, you look at the final and you're a prisoner of that one. I mean, you saw Arkansas won by 3 touchdowns. That wasn't the game that I saw. So I think the market adjusted too much. It's a late start time. It's an altitude. I like Colorado State here. And if it goes to 10, I'll certainly have a Colorado State ticket in pocket.
What's your number on this game?
Good call. I have it right around 7, and I downgraded Colorado State, I believe, 4 points from last week's game.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I've got it 5.5, so I'm definitely way lower than the market. But also, again, I mean, I don't know what Toledo is, and I've got a pretty good idea that Colorado State's not very good, especially with the data points that we've seen so far. But I had that stance coming into the season anyway. And you factor in all the different situational elements that you mentioned, the misleading final score last week for Arkansas. I mean, look, Colorado State had 34 points against an SEC defense. It's a bad SEC defense, but it's an SEC defense anyway. So an interesting game to be sure. I don't know if I'll take Colorado State. If it gets to 10, maybe, but also that's one of the things at this time of the year too. And you know, you mentioned this, you've got one data point essentially for Toledo. You've got maybe two FBS data points for a lot of these teams. I don't feel supremely confident in my power ratings right now because we've just seen, I mean, the difference of opponents is so across the board. You know, you've got some teams that play really great 1 week and really shitty the week before or the week after. It's tough right now in college football where I think you have elite teams, you've got really bad teams, And a lot of the teams in the middle, both Power 5 and Group of 5, very interchangeable within conference. So that'll be the litmus test for me once conference play really, really gets going for almost everybody next week.
Couldn't agree more with that.
All right, so we move down here to game 347-348, excuse me. Once again, a game I'm sure you haven't talked about on any of your radio appearances yet this week, but one that we're going to touch on here. New Mexico State and New Mexico, rivalry game in the Land of Enchantment. New Mexico, a four-point favorite in this game, lined down a little bit from five and a half about where it opened.
Yeah, and I got this one like 3.5. So I agree with the move. To be perfectly frank, I was a little surprised that it seemed short to me. But, you know, going back through my New Mexico numbers, I mean, that wasn't a great data point last week getting beat by 52 against Notre Dame. Although, I mean, New Mexico was -4 in turnovers in that one. That kind of skewed it a little bit. Speaking of turnovers, New Mexico State was -3 last week against San Diego State. You know, I think New Mexico's still trying to figure it out without Bob Davie. He'll be back, I think, next week. I mean, rivalry game here. The results have been mixed. I think early on in his tenure, Davie was good against New Mexico State, but now, you know, New Mexico State's been okay. If you're adding up the last 3-4 years, I just with my number at 3.5, line 4, I don't really have a bet here on this one, Adam.
Yeah, my number is 4, and I went ahead and took New Mexico State plus the 6 early in the week. So
there
a little
go.
Bit of line value. I don't know. We'll see if it comes to fruition. I just kind of figured this number would move down. And New Mexico was a fade team for me coming into the season. Now you've got the Bob Davie situation where he's away from the team. I think he was a detriment to the team anyway. You know, he had been suspended. He had some off-the-field issues going on. I mean, they peaked with that 9-3 year, but they really have not been very good since. So New Mexico State, look, while they're not good, they've been very competitive in this rivalry. They've split the last 6 meetings here in this one. So I took it. Hopefully we get a low-scoring game. And, again, not a game that you're going to hear on too many shows this week. How about game 353-354 here? This is kind of a perplexing one, too. Cal, who's a fraudulent top 25 team. No offense to Cal fans out there, but they're not a top 25 team. Taking on Ole Miss. Ole Miss swings from a short dog to a home favorite in Oxford here of 2.5 for this early kickoff.
Yeah, and that actually agrees with my power rankings. I got it like 1.5, 2, right in the middle there, like 1.75 is where I have it. So I agree with the move here. Intriguing handicap. I mean, I'm not sure I trust either team, and it's a 9 o'clock, you know, Pacific start time for Cal. That'll be interesting, you know, in the heat and humidity of the South. I don't think that'll be a good look for them. I mean, Cal's pretty much what we saw last year. I mean, East Coast bias. I don't think people understand how good Cal is defensively. They're really good, especially in the secondary. But offensively, they are really challenged. I mean, when you can only put up 278 yards against North Texas's defense, that's an issue. But it's not like I'm going to sit here and, you know, proclaim, you know, Ole Miss is a great bet in this one, because I haven't been overly impressed with what I've seen from Ole Miss, especially last week against Southeast Louisiana. They're +2 in turnovers. They get a 94-yard kick return touchdown, and yet entering the fourth quarter, they're only leading Southeast Louisiana 34-29. I'd like to fade both teams. I don't think it's a good spot for Cal, but I think the best unit on the field is their defense. But I'm certainly, you know, not sitting here thinking that I really like Ole Miss, so I'm not going to bet the game. Unless if it goes to 3, I'd probably take Cal.
Yeah, I got this one -2 as well, so happy to see the move. Wasn't going to play it, even with Cal as a short favorite. And, you know, again, I mean, you do have this Cal team who their defense can change games, and we saw that against Washington with that big outright upset win as about a 2-touchdown underdog. I don't know how this one plays out for them. I think athletically they're at a disadvantage. I think the early start time is a disadvantage. I don't know if it's going to be hot and humid down in Oxford. I'll have to check the weather forecast. That could be a disadvantage as well. But also, it's not like Ole Miss is, you know, the poster child for efficiency on offense. So really tough game, intriguing non-conference game. And this is one that makes me really happy that in college there's like 50 games you can bet instead of, you know, 15 or 16 in the NFL, because you can leave games like this alone and just not really worry about them. I'm really intrigued to get your thoughts on this one. I'm also really bummed to see this number coming down, because I should have played it at the 4. Maybe there was a stray 4.5 out there. Game 365-366, Appalachian State and North Carolina. As good as Appalachian State is, you can correct me if I'm wrong here, Brad, They have not beaten a Power 5 or a Power 5 team since they became an FBS member. So the Mountaineers are fully engaged for this one.
Yeah, they've had a close call. I think Wake Forest a couple of years ago, that they had them at home and had them dead in the water and couldn't overcome it. So, I mean, the fact that they've had a bye, here's my struggle with this. I mean, this is, in my opinion, a sharp line. Of course, I think App State was the correct play there, especially at 4.5. I mean, my numbers got it right at 2 right now. So, I mean, 2 and the market is like 2.5. There's some 3s out there. Of course, I lean with App State here, but you know, I guess I'm longing for, if this is on, you know, the board in 1995 or 2000, North Carolina's probably laying, you know, 4.5, the original number, maybe even 6. the market's a lot more sharper than what it used to be. Even in my early days, going back now 10 years ago at, Phil Steele, I think the market's onto this, the situational advantage that App State has coming off a bye. North Carolina just played 3 really close games that came down to the final possession. You know, are they going to be able to keep continuing to get back off the mat? I'm not sure. I'd lean App State here.
Well, unfortunately, it looks like virtually no one's going to be able to watch this game because it's on some sort of alternate ACC network. And by the way, I think you asked me if I have the ACC network, and I found out last week and I actually do. Lucky me for that, I guess.
Yeah, but I do too. Out of nowhere that they get my cable company put it on. I guess people complain. I like it. In Vegas, I think people wanted to gamble on their games. So, yeah, it was within a few days of me saying that I saw it on my cable finally.
Here's the thing for North Carolina. I mean, look, they were beaten by South Carolina until Jake Bentley started throwing to the wrong team. They were trailing against Miami after blowing a 17-3 lead. Wake Forest really dominated the first, you know, 2.5, 3 quarters of that game last week before North Carolina again woke up in the fourth quarter. I don't know what North Carolina exactly is here. I have a pretty good idea of what Appalachian State is. I mean, I just think that they're a very solid team. And also, head coach Eli Drinkwitz. I mean, look, he was the offensive coordinator last year at NC State. He knows this North Carolina personnel. Doesn't maybe know the schemes exactly with Phil Longo doing some different stuff. But he knows the personnel, and I think that really helps App State, again, coming off the bye. My peer power rating line is 1 on this game. So, again, shame on me for not getting in earlier in the week, but I think App State gets that Power 5 win that they're looking for. And I, you know, not that I have anything against North Carolina.
Your money line?
I am. I mean, I could. I might as well now because I've already lost. You know, I lost some line value with the 4, 4.5 that's out there. If I'm going to play it, I might as well go ahead and take the money line on it. I also have to check the nugget line on this one, too, because maybe that's one that kind of winds up making my nugget card. See what the timing of that line move was. But in any event, game 367, 368 here, Auburn and Texas A&M. We got to touch on at least a few of the marquee games here with you this week, Brad. A&M down from 4 to 3.5. I kind of expected this move. My line's personally 2.5 on this game. But, man, I don't know if there's a lot of edges to be had here.
Yeah, tough game to hand. I lean A&M. I got it like 3.8. I mean, I just don't know if I trust Bo Nix. He's the Auburn true freshman quarterback. I mean, as a true freshman, he's been a little uneven. I'll say this. Jimbo Fisher's been really good against the number. I mean, Texas A&M's last 20 games are 16-4. And kind of a revenge spot for Texas A&M. I remember last year's game quite specifically. I mean, A&M's up like 24-14 late in the fourth quarter. And they blow it. They were -3 in turnovers in that game. I think both teams are close, you know, pretty remarkably close. They're marquee games, Auburn against Oregon, A&M against Clemson. I think both teams got fortunate covers late in the final seconds of those games. Both teams off of easy wins over inferior opponents. I mean, we're going to get a really good idea what these teams are about after this week. Again, I was – you know, at 3.8, so on in the 4, I kind of understood the move down to 3.5. But right now I'm leaning with A&M.
It's a tough game, you know, I mean, because, again, you've got two very talented teams. You have an A&M team that's improving in the trenches under Jimbo Fisher, and that's been a big key. And that's the big key for me in this game. You know, does A&M protect Kellen Mond enough? Because we all know Auburn, I mean, they just churn out defensive linemen like crazy there. So that's the key matchup to me. And when it's a matchup like that, I think it increases the difficulty of the handicap because if Auburn gets there, all of a sudden you've got 3rd-and-12, 3rd-and-14, stuff like that. If Auburn doesn't get there, that's a big part of their defensive equation. So I think it's one intangible that is kind of difficult to try and project. So not a game I'm going to be on, a game I will watch, a game I'll be very interested in, but just not one I'll have too much betting activity in. We stay in the SEC here, but we go to the SEC East for this one. 371, 372. South Carolina goes from Columbia to Columbia to take on Missouri. This one down from 9.5 to 9. There's even a straight 8.5 at Bookmaker out there. What do you think about this one, Brad?
Yeah, I mean, it's right there with my power rankings. And as you can see, where we've gotten tightened up a little bit compared to where I was in previous weeks where I had a lot of power ratings discrepancies. But I got Missouri like 9.3 here. If you're asking me to take a side, I think I'm on the Missouri side here. Although I thought Helinski, the quarterback for South Carolina, hung in there last week against Alabama. Everyone's talking about their fortunate, quote-unquote, backdoor cover. I mean, people forget that Alabama was never covering in that game until Bama scored a touchdown with 2 minutes left. I hate that everyone's a prisoner of the moment, and they always look at the final, you know, the final score there. So I thought Carolina deserved the cover in that game against the Crimson Tide last week. You know, Missouri, I go back to week one, really big missed opportunity there. Game that turnovers really played a big part in the loss against Wyoming. But they've looked the part pretty much since, blowing out West Virginia, blowing out Southeast Missouri State. I just trust them a little bit more here with this number. I'd lean Missouri.
My number is 9. I'm right there. I watched all the South Carolina game last week, and that holding call on the fake field goal was real iffy. Real, real iffy. And that was a game changer because, I mean, that would have been, you know, the gadget play touchdown, the types of things you need to stay in a game with Alabama. But then as you watch throughout the rest of the game, South Carolina did deserve the cover, but holy shit, their secondary is bad, and their safety play is atrocious. So what I don't understand about this game is why the total's coming down. South Carolina can't tackle. And I think Ryan Helinski can move this offense, but they cannot tackle in the back seven. Missouri should have some big plays. I think South Carolina can move it. I don't get why this total's coming down from 64 to 61.
You know, I'm going to trust your opinion on it because you watch a lot more South Carolina play-by-play than I do, but I leaned the under. So I actually bet the under. I put my totals number at 58, so I actually bet it at 63.5 under.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll see how that one plays out. Should be definitely an interesting game, and it sounds like the under is the sharp side, so maybe I'm just four-sided here in this one. But I guess we'll see. Maybe South Carolina can fix some of those things, especially because – I mean, Missouri is not Alabama. I mean, the only team that's close to Alabama is really Clemson or Georgia or somebody like that. So maybe South Carolina not as confused at the line of scrimmage. Maybe the safety's taking better angles to the ball in this game. Once again, something I'll watch pretty closely there. How about game 373, 374, West Virginia and Kansas? This is a fascinating handicap. West Virginia, outright win last week over NC State after they did not look particularly good the first 2 weeks. And how about the Kansas Jayhawks, man? What a win for Les Miles' program. Can they sustain their newfound success as a 4.5-point dog?
Ooh, tough handicap because, I mean, it wasn't overwhelmingly good looks for either team in each of their first two games. And then it's almost, you know, you got a pair of first-year coaches. So did the light bulb finally, you know, pop on? Or were those performances last week for both teams kind of outliers? And that's why it's an intriguing handicap. But I'm going off my numbers. I got West Virginia 7, and I'm certainly on that side. I just trust them a little bit more. Although Kansas, it wasn't last week the blowout went over Boston College. It wasn't turnovers. I mean, they legit ran right through that Boston College defense. I mean, they certainly, after they were down 24-21 late second quarter, they dominated that game. They were clearly the better team. I guess I trust Neil Brown a little bit more than I do Les Miles. So I'm on West Virginia here. But even though, you know, hey, the line's 4, my number 7, that usually signifies big bet, maybe best bet of the weekend. It's tough because, I don't know if my confidence level is really strong on either team. Whoever exceeds, if one of these two teams really vastly exceeds expectations in this game, I think then we're starting to see the truth of that actual team.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, my number's 5 on this game. I thought I was high on West Virginia coming into the season, And then I see this number at 5, and I'm kind of scratching my head a little bit thinking, did I maybe over-adjust the Mountaineers? Because I wanted to play on them. I thought that maybe it was a little bit overblown with the lost talent that was there. I know it was very, very productive, but they still had a Power 5 transfer in Austin Kendall at quarterback. They still had a pretty decent running game. And I really like Neil Brown and the job that he did down there at Troy, in particular, building up that Troy offensive line. Thought Kendall would have time to throw. Thought, you know, hey, there's still some decent athleticism here. The first two games were disappointing. The third game where I thought, okay, NC State, you know, they've looked really good. They lay an egg. Again, this is one of those games where we've got the data points that are kind of all over the map for both of these teams, and it's probably best just to stay away. But still a fun handicap, and like you said, we'll find out a lot about these two teams here this weekend. We'll find out a little bit about these two teams here too. Game 375, 376, Oklahoma State and Texas. Full disclosure, I played the bad opener of Texas at 7.5. My number is closer to double digits here. I was stunned to see it come down, but I'm happy to see it going back up.
Yeah, I got 6.5. It's interesting that it's going back up, even though Texas announced that a couple of their defensive backs might not play here, and that's not good against that Oklahoma State offense, but it's intriguing to see some of the movements. But I'm certainly, even with that, I lean on Texas. I mean, Tom Herman, as long as he's not laying more than a touchdown, he's money. He's 20-7 against the spread in his career when he's not laying more than a touchdown. Kind of a revenge spot. I mean, Texas has lost 4 straight to Oklahoma State, 3 of those games by 3 points each. So I think this is a game that Texas certainly circled. And look, I was lower on Texas in the marketplace, at least as far as season win totals coming in this season. Texas, to me, has pretty much played to expectation so far, whether it was, I went against them in the Louisiana Tech game, but they got me there, even though I thought the box score said Louisiana Tech was the right side. The LSU game played close to the number. Last week played close to the number. Some, you know, final minute point spread drama against Rice. So my power rating is pretty much flat on Texas. Oklahoma State I have up slightly. I thought they were fortunate to cover last week, you know, outscoring Tulsa 20-0 in the second half. But with that being said, power rankings call Texas to be the side here. I'm with you, Adam. I think it's hook 'em horns for me.
And this is another one of those games. I mean, look, Oklahoma State did play a Power 5 opponent week 1 in Oregon State, who's just not a very good team. McNeese State and Tulsa. Look, third road game out of 4 for Oklahoma State here in this one.
There you go.
So, not a whole lot of opportunities at home as of yet. Spencer Sanders has looked great, but I mean, you know, Texas's defense is obviously faster, stronger, better than the 3 that they've played so far. That's the question for me. And I think Spencer Sanders is the key here because, you know, they've had a great running game. Hubbard's been fantastic. It's a lot tougher to run on Texas than it is on those other teams. Can Sanders be the guy to keep this game close and, you know, maybe even pull the outright upset? I don't know, but I feel like Sam Ellinger can be that guy to get some margin here for Texas. So, one of the things about the early line move on this game, the modeling crowd gets in early. Oklahoma State's been very impressive on offense. That drives a little bit of it. But also, look, we all know Tom Herman, preferred role is as an underdog. Here he's favored. This season he has expectations. I think people are going to be, it's going to be guilty until proven innocent for Tom Herman in that role. And that probably played a factor in this line move as well.
Yep, I can agree with that. What I'm intrigued about is the total here, because to me, I get it that LSU and Texas, really put the points on the board specifically late in that game. But maybe as the teams are feeling each other out, I kind of like a first half under here. I think 73 is too high. It's certainly much higher than the one I had it. I had it in like the upper 60s, with what the opener was right there at 69. So I'm probably going to be involved in this one quite a bit on both sides in total.
All right, so we go to game 391, 392. I'm sure you've got takes on this one. Notre Dame goes down to Athens to take on Georgia. Georgia up to a 14.5-point favorite, mostly market-wide. Any 14 left out there has some extra juice slapped on it. I mean, look, you got a top-10 battle here, and people are going to say, man, this number looks high for a couple of top-10 teams, but surely seems like it's justified here to this point.
Yeah, it's just a bad matchup for Notre Dame. And I'm not overly down on the Irish this year, but I do think they're not as good as last year's team, specifically in some key spots that's going to affect them in this one. And I think it's right up the middle of the defense, especially the front 7. I mean, they lost their best defensive tackle in Jerry Tillery, first rounder for the Chargers. and they lost, you know, two guys that were 3-year starters at linebacker and Tavon Coney and Drew Tranquil. It hasn't showed in the first two games, or has it? I mean, Notre Dame is playing Louisville and New Mexico, and they're giving up 230 rushing yards per game, 5 yards per carry. Now, in my opinion, they're playing one of the best rushing offenses in the entire country. I get it, Georgia hasn't played anybody, but I promise you, that offensive line that averages 330 pounds a man, I think they're going to have their way with Notre Dame's defensive line. Notre Dame's very undersized at defensive line this year. I mean, their average weight's 273 pounds, so when you're talking nearly 60-pound difference, I mean, that's stuff you see when Notre Dame's playing Air Force or Navy, not when, you know, they're playing another Power 5 opponent. And Georgia's shown a propensity to blow teams out, especially at home. Georgia, last 15 home games, they won by an average of 31 points per game. Every single one of those 15 wins, 14 points or more, and 13 by 21 or more, they make a statement. I bet Georgia, although, I mean, it continues to climb, I mean, certainly there's not as much value as what that minus 13 opener was sitting at. That's where I bet Georgia. I do think the Bulldogs blow out Notre Dame on Saturday night.
Not much for me to add. I mean, I'm right around the number, but I agree with everything you said there where, you know, just matchup-wise, looks like it's a very, very tough spot here for the Fighting Irish. How about in this ACC game here real quickly in the Atlantic Division game, 393-394, Louisville and Florida State. Early week moves through a key number kind of stand out for a variety of different reasons. Louisville coming down from 8.5 to 6.5 is – it's telling in a lot of different ways. For one thing, it's telling about the job Scott Satterfield's doing. And in another way, it's telling about the job Willie Taggart's not doing.
Yeah, and with that being said, I mean, my power rankings are saying Florida State's the play here. And I thought I was higher on Louisville in the marketplace, at least coming in this season. I got them up 3 points since the start, so it's been a thumbs up for them. Florida State I have down like 6 points since the start. I'll be honest with you, I bet against Florida State last week with Virginia, and I came away impressed with Florida State. I didn't see quit. They hung in that game. And clearly, even though I got a push from that, I felt almost guilty getting a push with Virginia. I thought Florida State was clearly the right side. So, intriguing number here. My numbers are very strong on Florida State, and I get it. Louisville is getting the majority of the tickets, but I'm going to talk myself into betting the Noles. And then if I lose this week with them, I'm done with them. On them or against them, forget Florida State.
I agree. My number is up closer to double digits here for this one. So, you know, it would be Florida State for me from a power rating standpoint. And, I mean, they should have a lot more talent than Louisville, you know. And not to say that Louisville is not a talented team, but should be a little bit of a talent mismatch. The problem here is that you have to overcome Willie Taggart. And you would think, as Florida State keeps going here, Kendall Briles has to get his fingerprints all over this offense to the point where they look better at some point. I don't know if it's this week, but
That offense. And at some points they look like a top 10 offense nationally, and other points they look like a bottom 10 offense.
One more game to touch on here. This one by listener request. You and I are going to have a difference of opinion on this game here. 399-400, Utah State and San Diego State. Maybe a little bit of a chase game for people here this weekend. And Utah State, 4-point favorite, not as high as 5.5, and now it's come back down to almost around where it opened in the offshore market.
I'm on San Diego State here. I know it's a bad matchup for them, and that's my concern. And Utah State coming off a bye, they've exceeded expectations. I wasn't a big Gary Anderson guy. I mean, he flat out quit his last two jobs. And I guess from a personal aspect, I don't like that. I don't like quitters. You know, looking at, I got them up 2.5 points, even though they've only played two games. Wake Forest was a good, data point, even though they lost it, and then they blew out an FCS opponent. San Diego State, I mean, 3-0 start for them. I mean, what's there to argue? I mean, it's pretty much typical San Diego State football under Rocky Long. I mean, really good defense, offense, not so much, but, I look at it, San Diego State's one outright covered all of them the last four times they've been a home dog in the last 6 years. I'll take them here getting the 4.
My number on this game's 5.5. I grabbed Utah State early in the week at 3.5, and I'm kind of disappointed to see the line coming back down to 4. But the thing about this game is this, and you know, this is part of my handicapping process, I guess. how many points does San Diego State need to score to keep pace? If Utah State has success against that 3-3-5, it is a big if, I will grant you that. If Utah State goes out there and hangs, you know, upper 20s, low 30s, can San Diego State come remotely close to covering the number? I don't know. You know, that offense is just not good at all whatsoever. It's almost a lot like this Cal team where usually San Diego State's defense is the best unit on the field. Here, I think it's Utah State's offense primarily because of Jordan Love. So that's where I'm kind of at here. If Utah State is able to hang a decent number, can San Diego State keep pace? To me, the answer is no, but that's the big question is, can they go out there and do what they usually do on offense?
Yeah, and then where do we get a key indicator here? I mean, the money's on the over, 54. I mean, that's certainly a higher total for a San Diego State game. And I mean, if it plays into, you know, where these teams are in the upper 20s, I think your concerns in backing San Diego State in that point, I think are really legitimate.
All right, so we move over to the NFL side. And, I mean, look, we're going to try and touch on a couple of games here quickly. I don't want to hold you hostage for too long on today's show, but you and I talked about this for a couple minutes before we started recording here. This NFL card is miserable. You've got, what, 9 backup quarterbacks playing. You've got 2-3 touchdown lines. You know, the Thursday night game is probably going to be a dud. This card blows. It just sucks.
Yeah, I mean, I certainly think that's the case, but I struggled, and you know, NFL, obviously college is my number one sport, but I've actually had the most success. If you look at my betting history and you know, my picks history, it's actually the NFL, but yeah, this week was certainly a struggle. I think teasing through the 3-7 corridor, I think it'll be an option for me on a couple of games. That'll be one of my bigger bets, and maybe we'll see if we can get some line move off a key number. But, yeah, I'll just say this because I'm an open book, and I think that's important in our industry where so many people are fake. But, you know, I struggle coming up with the 3 picks I do each and every week out of my newsletter, where other weeks I'm like, how in the hell do I narrow it down to 3? I like 5 or 6 games. This week I'm like, my goodness, how do I find 3 picks here to put my powers back?
Just think about being in the super contest of the Circa Million this week, or you got to come up with 5 of them, you know, no matter what. A couple of games I want to touch on with you real quickly here. The primetime games, Sunday night, Monday night, Rams and Browns. I'm sure you watched the Browns game on Monday night, you know, a guy with some local ties here in the area. Rams, 3-point favorite with extra juice. There are some 3.5s out there in the market as well. I don't know here because Baker didn't look good again, had the big play to Odell, but Jared Goff sucks on the road. So, I want to like the Rams, but do they get margin here and cover this number?
You know, it's kind of a split. I mean, I can understand why people are on the Cleveland side, and I get it that Jared Goff sucks on the road, but, I mean, the Rams still win on the road. I mean, since McVay took over, they're 15-3 straight up on the road. Average covers by 5.5 points per game. I don't trust Cleveland. I mean, they're just not buttoned up. 27 penalties in 2 games. I mean, obviously they could have the penalties last week against an overmatched Jets team, but it certainly hurt them in week 1 against Tennessee. And how good's Tennessee? I mean, they turn around and lose to Indy at home after blowing out the Browns. I just trust the Rams at a big spot where the pressure's on. They've been there. They've done that. And I think it's the public play, but I'm with it. I mean, it's not like Joe Public, you know, only wins 25% of the time. I mean, he wins like 48% of the time. So I'm actually on the Rams here.
I think I like the Rams too. And it's tough. I mean, I'll see, you know, what the number looks like in the Circa Million. Maybe they throw out a 3.5 and it makes it really hard for me to play that. But I think schematically the Rams are buttoned up, as you said. I mean, they've got, you know, McVay, they know what they're going to do on offense. You got a very smart veteran defensive coordinator, and the Browns, brand new head coach, new coordinators. And it looks like it through 2 games, the offensive line is atrocious. You know, I obviously with the look on the health of Aaron Donald, make sure he's going to be okay. But, you know, it's going to be a tough spot here, I think, for Cleveland. So, and they may just be out-talented, but just out-schemed and out-coached a little bit here in this one. What about the Monday night game? Chicago and Washington, you know, this is going to be an intriguing one, too, because obviously the preferred sharp side early on is Washington. It's a tough bet to make. There are a lot of tough bets you have to make in the NFL, but I mean, I don't know if this becomes a pro versus split or a pro versus public game, but sure going that way here already.
Yeah, first I want to close up the – are you going to be at that big Sunday night game? Are you going to be in the dog pound? Am I going to see you on TV when I flip it on Sunday night?
You will not see me streaking across the field with no shirt on. You will not see me at that game. Unfortunately, got other stuff to do. But, hey, big spot. And also, too, I mean, look, the Browns get Thursday night games. They don't get Sunday night games. That
no,
they
don't.
Be
I'm trying
zoo.
To.
I mean, they're going to be tailgating for 12 hours or more before that game.
That's going to be a pretty rowdy crowd. And that would be also a concern because they don't get that spotlight very much at all. But, going back to the Monday night game, and I'm sorry for going sidetracked there, but, I mean, I think it's a tough bet on both here. And you hit the nail on the head. You got to make some tough bets in the NFL, and I think specifically this week. I think, if anything, I think the under. I know that seems like clearly the side here, but I think Chicago could just be a dead nut under team this year, and at least early in the season, I'm not sure the market's fully grasping. I mean, they have gone under the total by double digits in each of their first two games. I mean, it could be an instance where they clearly have a bottom five offense, but easily a top five defense. Lean under for me. I don't expect to get too involved, though.
Yeah, I don't blame you. I mean, I may end up on Washington just because it's going to be hard to find five games I'm interested in this week. Well, I don't trust Trubisky. I don't trust Chicago.
Yeah.
I think Washington's a little bit better than they've played here so far. I don't see Chicago's not a team I want to lay any, decent price with here. You know, over the key number of 3, some places even had this thing 4.5 at open. I just don't see Chicago as that kind of team this year. Even though that defense is very good, do they maximize their offensive possessions? Probably not. So with the fact that I'm hard-pressed to get to 5 games in both of those contests, Washington almost by default may kind of make the card as that, Monday night home dog kind of thing. But again, this NFL card here, very brutal to say the least. But if you head on over to bradpowersports.com, you'll get some good insights on both the NFL card as well as the college card.
You certainly will, and I like that little throw, that toss there. That's why you're a professional at this. That's why you do it daily, buddy. BradPowerSports.com, dead top of the page, and then you can check out, the free picks page where you can download all past issues of my newsletter. If you like what you see, and why the heck not, I mean, there's a ton of info in there. I actually write up every single college game, every single NFL game each and every week, get you the top picks of the week. We're off to an okay start. I mean, 58% against the spread. It's early. I mean, we only got 20 data points, but that's not too bad. And, I mean, if that's not enough data points, how about 700-plus games where we're hitting 57% the last 5 years on our best bets? But don't buy it for the bets. Buy it for the info. $79 for the rest of the season. College, NFL. It's a weekly newsletter emailed to you each and every Wednesday. Go to bradpowersports.com.
And as always, you can follow Brad on Twitter at Brad Powers and the number 7. Brad, appreciate your time as always, brother. Thank you so much for joining me, man. We'll talk to you again next week.
All right. Sounds good. Take care, my friend.
There you go. There's professional handicapper Brad Powers over at bradpowerssports.com. Something I want to mention here on today's show, it's difficult and time consuming sometimes to pull out the information that you need. If you want to look at a team's win loss or spread or total points record, in different scenarios, coming off of a loss, coming off of a head-to-head matchup against a rival or another opponent, in cold weather, you want to look at an under. Think about the key numbers in the NFL. Used to be 42, 45, stuff like that. Now more like 51, 52, 54. If you want to look for those different types of betting angles, download the Trends app. That's TRNDS, all caps, big product here, available on iOS only. But you've got all sorts of good betting information, angles, and trends, as the name of the app would imply there. So again, that's TRNDS, available on the iOS app. It is a free download. There is a premium subscription tier where you can find some additional information. But the Trends app simplifies access to powerful data, allowing users to quickly self-source and share meaningful sports betting trends, all from the convenience of your mobile device. Once again, available for iOS only. That's the Trends app, TRNDS. Go ahead and take a look for it here and see how it helps you out for this weekend. All right, so to finish up this edition of Bang the Book Radio here, I'm going to talk a little bit about some of the college football games that we didn't get to, also give you some quick thoughts for the Thursday night action. Houston and Tulane, game that we mentioned on Monday's show with Kyle Hunter, game 303-304 here. Tulane, 5-point favorite in the marketplace. This was a number that was around 3, 3.5 early in the week. Somebody very influential bet this number up to 5.5. It may have even touched 6 in a few places out there. Some of the more public shops, some of the shops unwilling to take on some exposure and some risk. Still sitting out there at 5. And again, like we talked about on Monday, like I talked about in my video preview for this game over on our Bang the Book YouTube page, it's a really bad spot for Houston because you go from preparing for the air raid to preparing for this modified spread option on a short week. And also Houston with some defensive losses from last year and a new coaching staff that's not as well-versed in facing this Willie Fritz team. So I think it's a really, really tough spot for the Cougars in a lot of ways. The problem here is that this number is quite high up at 5. Now, you still have a dynamic player in De'Aaron King who has not been as efficient this season as he was last season. He's been okay running the football. His completion percentage down considerably from last year. Seems like he's having a hard time grasping this Dana Holgorsen offense. So again, anytime you talk about a team that plays a ball control style of offense like Tulane does, run the football, easy throws with Justin McMillan, you've got to maximize your possessions if you're Houston. I think it's a tough thing for them to do in this game. Even though my pure power rating number on this game is 1, like I mentioned early in the week, probably a 2.5 or so point adjustment to the spot for Houston. Yeah, and even at that point, I'm still only at 3.5. But the only way I could really look tonight is Tulane. Not a play for me, not a strong opinion by any means. But again, a very telling line move here in this one. Over on the NFL side tonight, Titans and Jaguars. Tennessee, 1.5-point favorite at open. Not a whole lot of movement here on this game, 1.5 or 2. We have seen the total kind of bounce around a little bit, dropping down from 40 to 38. Would expect a low-scoring game here. Again, you've got Gardner Minshew in his second career start, first career start on a short week. It's a very tough spot for a rookie quarterback to be in, especially a rookie quarterback that doesn't really have a ton of help at the skill positions here for Jacksonville. They had some injuries throughout training camp. Leonard Fournette just really hasn't been the explosive player that the Jaguars hoped he would be. Not a whole lot of help at the skill positions for Minshew. Tennessee, on the other hand, maybe a little bit better equipped for the short week, but also still injury and suspension concerns on the offensive line. We know Jacksonville's defense is very good. Jacksonville's defense, quite possibly the best unit on the field here between these two teams. Tennessee, you know, they run the ball well with Derrick Henry. They do some swing pass and screen type stuff, but it's really hard for Marcus Mariota to soften up a defense. Doesn't have a lot of deep threats, not particularly good at throwing the deep ball, kind of improvises as something of a dual threat type of guy. And that's the worry that you have here tonight with Tennessee, who should win the game, I would think, especially with the short week and the rookie quarterback angle. But I don't know how much success they have moving the football. Jacksonville will pack the line, will flood the box. The safeties will probably play a yard or two closer to the line of scrimmage than they otherwise would against a better offensive team because you don't really have to worry about Mariota beating you over the top. I think this is an ugly game. I agree with the move on the under. Under 38 would be the way I would look here in this one. Maybe you could take a look at teasing Jacksonville up to 7.5, teasing the total up a little bit into that 44 range. Kind of get some of that lost line value back to, play a side and teaser under if you've got a book that allows you to do that. But ultimately, overall, again, the only thing I would look at here, the under 38, because I think this is a very ugly, miserable, bad division game here on Thursday night. So just some thoughts there for you on tonight's two games and bounce back over to the college side and take a look at some of these games that we really haven't talked about too much here yet this week. I think Louisiana Monroe and Iowa State right at the top of the board for Saturday is a really interesting game because Iowa State, devastating loss last week in the rivalry game. The fans stuck it out through a couple of weather delays. Now you've got an 11 a.m. kickoff in Ames against a Sun Belt team, a decent improving Sun Belt team there with Matt Viator doing a good job with the Warhawks. I think this is a tough one for Iowa State. I think it's a tough one to get going. It's one of those situations where you're going to have to create your own energy. And those can be tough for these college teams in these early kickoffs. It'll be a similar thing with UConn and Indiana. Indiana coming off of getting blown out by Ohio State. Do they have a buzz in the building at 11 a.m. in Bloomington for this game? I don't know. And these are two big numbers here that you're looking at where Iowa State, you know, a decent offensive team, but are they an offensive team built to create a lot of margin, put this game away in the second half? I don't know. Indiana, same thing. We know UConn is awful. UConn is one of the worst teams we've ever seen in college football over the last 2 years. That's a big number. And I know it's gone up from 26.5 to 28, but these are the considerations from a handicapping standpoint, not just the X's and O's, but also is Iowa State mobilized and invested to go out there and blow out Louisiana Monroe in an early kickoff, coming off such a heartbreak, you know, in that rivalry game against Iowa. And furthermore, Iowa State plays Baylor next week. So they get into conference play on the road there in Waco. And look, there are a few different schools of thought here. And I mentioned this when I talked about situational spots sometime last week on the show. There's a lot of narratives surrounding situational spots. You can mold them to fit the side that you like. You can mold them to, you know, to validate the argument that you're trying to make. For Iowa State, it's a bad spot. Off the rivalry game, devastating loss, early kickoff. On the other hand, you can say Matt Campbell, who's a very good head coach, can mobilize his team to take out some frustration on an inferior opponent, get things fixed up and squared away before you play Baylor next week. So you can't really take your foot off the gas because you're trying to work through some of the problems that you've had here so far this season. And look, you've had a lot of problems. You don't have David Montgomery. You don't have Akeem Butler. You've got to get this offense figured out because in Big 12 play, you got to score some points. Iowa State's been very good defensively, but you got to score some points. So some people can say early kickoff, letdown spot off of last week's emotional loss, and a conference game on deck. Other people can say conference game on deck, you better get your shit together, and let's forget about that bad loss last week by going out here and blowing out an opponent. So a lot of considerations here for that Louisiana Monroe-Iowa State game. UConn and Indiana, a little bit of a different spot in that Indiana goes back into Big Ten play, but also they're coming off of getting blown out by an Ohio State team. It's just superior to them. So, again, these are things that you want to look at. Sometimes you're going to have these big lines that appear to be throwaway games. When you start peeling back the layers, maybe you find some more angles that you do like a little bit. You know, like we talked about, Miami of Ohio and Ohio State on yesterday's show, the Buckeyes on the road in Lincoln for their next game. How invested are they in blowing out an in-state MAC opponent? It's different when you play Cincinnati, a team that probably talked a lot during the game. You know, a team that was very good in the AAC, former DC Luke Fickell coming to town, you know, former player Marcus Freeman, the defensive coordinator. That's a game you're invested in. That's a game you get up for. Do you get up for Miami of Ohio? Probably not. I wouldn't think so. At least it's an afternoon kickoff, so Ohio Stadium may be a little bit livelier than some of these other spots. But still, you know, it's a challenge to get up to create enough margin to beat these inferior teams. Maybe Iowa State has that chip on its shoulder that they need. Ohio State doesn't. And I don't know if Indiana does either. So those are some considerations for some of those early big spread games. As we move down the board a little bit, you know, Old Dominion and Virginia is kind of an interesting game to me. I faded Old Dominion with Virginia Tech in the Golden Nugget a couple of weeks ago. Virginia Tech had every reason to be in that game. They got beat last year by Old Dominion. They were trying to work some things out on the offensive side, trying to get a little more efficient. A lot of questions about Bud Foster's defense. Vatek never had a prayer to cover that number. Does Virginia use that game as kind of a frame of reference to their players and say, hey, boys, look, let's do what our rival couldn't do? On the other hand, they just played Florida State, favored against Florida State for the first time ever in their head-to-head meetings, and now you play Old Dominion. That's a letdown. Old Dominion, not a good team. Line coming down from 30.5 to 28.5 here, but that's the thing here. You know, does Virginia want to put margin in this game, or do they want to get ahead, put it in cruise control, and sit Bryce Perkins? But, of course, at that point in time, you run into the question of, well, Bryce Perkins isn't going to be there forever in Charlottesville. Let's go ahead and run the offense with the backup the way that we normally would. You know, does Bronco run it up on somebody? I don't know. Again, these big spread games probably throwaways for a lot of people because they're like, well, I don't want to lay that number. And obviously the underdog isn't very good, so I don't want to take that number either. But there are a lot of emotional and situational arguments to be made in these games. And again, there are two sides to every situational coin, but you may value one more than another. And maybe that does put you on a specific game or something like that. So again, a lot of these big favorite numbers up on the top of the board here for the college football card. Another one, Troy and Akron. Troy, a 17.5 point favorite here. Go ahead and take on an Akron team that is awful. I mean, Akron's, you know, I think they're 128th in my power ratings now, one of the worst teams in college football. But for Troy, what is their incentive to go to Akron, Ohio, a place that they're not typically going to go, and blow this team out? You know, do they have any incentive to go up there and do that? Is that something they're going to be invested in when next week they play Arkansas State in a big conference opener there in the Sun Belt? You know, maybe Troy by default just does crush Akron. Maybe Akron is just that bad. Troy with a big running back injury, though. I believe his name is B.J. Smith. He's out for the rest of the year for them. Very, very good running back. So they're shorthanded a little bit. You know, do they run the risk of losing somebody else? Or do they try to give that guy a bunch of reps and see what he's able to do for the rest of the season? Again, a lot of ors and ands and buts when you talk about these big spreads in these non-conference games that are out there. For Ball State and NC State, Ball State, a team that some sharp people like coming into the season. NC State looks very good in their first two games playing, you know, some lesser caliber teams. Then they go on the road to West Virginia and get pretty handily beaten. Do they bounce back here this week against Ball State? Certainly they could. They have the offensive personnel to put some margin in a game. But also for Ball State, you know, look, they're not going anywhere this season. They're probably not even going to a bowl game. They may not even sniff bowl eligibility. So they have no look-ahead spot. They're not worried about anything like that. They just want to go down there and try and play well against a Power 5 team. You know, the most dangerous team is one that has nothing to lose. And really, you know, Ball State has nothing to lose. So does NC State cover a number like that? As we look at some games here with some more reasonable lines, Georgia State and Texas State is interesting. You know, Georgia State, that big win over Tennessee, then they get trucked last week by Western Michigan, and they're an underdog to Georgia State. Georgia State a three-point favorite. Texas State a three-point favorite. Texas State virtually never favored over anybody. And they're favored here against a team that was good enough 1 week to beat Tennessee and bad enough the following week to give up like 700 yards against Western Michigan. So that's one where you probably want to look for the context clues in the marketplace. Yeah, this line sat three all week, but where is it going? Where is the juice? What looks to be the preferred side? Right now, I don't see any answers to those questions out there. And that's a game that's not going to draw any public activity. Any line move is going to be sharp on Georgia State versus Texas State. It's going to be somebody who's a respected bettor or at least somebody with influential enough money to move that number. So far, we haven't seen it. But Texas State, a team a lot of people liked against Wyoming, they were the better team in that game, but they had some turnovers, they had some other issues, and Wyoming was able to win and cover the number there. What happens this week with the Georgia State team that just went up to Kalamazoo, a place they wouldn't normally go? Was that just an outlier performance? Are they not very good? Again, my number looking at that game here specifically between Georgia State and Texas State has that game much closer to pick 'em. I've got it basically a coin flip game. Texas State's a three-point favorite. I don't know if I want to go against Texas State, though, because with Bob Stitt, they're doing more of an air raid type of offense. A lot of ground for Georgia State to cover defensively in that game, where Tennessee wasn't able to spread them out and run that type of offense, which is one of the reasons why the Volunteers lost that game. So would probably go against my power ratings and maybe lean with Texas State in that one. But again, those low numbers in those Sun Belt lower conference types of games can be a higher variance type of environment, because in a lot of cases, those teams very, very interchangeable and just home field advantage and some of the other factors into the equation. A game I probably should have talked about with some people this week, 379-380 SMU and TCU. That line right now, SMU, about a 9-point underdog. My number is 9 in that game. Did play SMU earlier in the week on the Bet Online openers. I believe it was 11.5 at that point in time. Expecting that number to go down. Thinking that SMU, maybe a team flying under the radar a little bit here. They've been better than people expected. I don't think much of TCU. I know Gary Patterson's a good coach, but I don't really love the personnel that they have there. When you look at this game, though, this is a rivalry game. These two schools are 40 miles apart. Yeah, I like SMU. However, obviously you have a conference discrepancy here. TCU in the Big 12, SMU in the AAC. TCU has won 7 in a row, 11 of 12, and 17 of 19. And a lot of them haven't been all that close. So I do like SMU. I like the direction the program's going in. I grabbed the number there in that game. But at the same time, this has been about as one-sided of a rivalry as you can get. And again, differing situational thoughts in a game like this. SMU, it's a rivalry game for them. TCU, when you win 17 of 19, how passionate are you about the rivalry? How much does it matter to you? In particular, when you're a team like TCU and you play in the Big 12 and you've got some bigger games on the horizon. On the other hand, you've won this game 17 of 19 times. So you've got a very high confidence level coming into this game. You know you're the better team. You've got the better athletes. You're in the stronger conference. And I like Sonny Dykes, but you've got a coaching advantage here with Gary Patterson as well. So again, I lean with SMU at 10 or higher, but at 9.5, it kind of takes it off the board. It's a little bit of a tougher game, a different type of handicap for a variety of different reasons here. You know, you got a game like UCLA and Washington State, and this will be the one I'll finish up on, game 397, 398. Washington State, 18.5, 19-point favorite. And Chip Kelly coming out early in the week and saying, well, if I had the personnel, I would just run the wishbone. I wish I could. And there are some people out there that kind of look at this UCLA situation and say that the Bruins have already quit on Chip Kelly. You know, maybe the playbook is too difficult. Maybe he's too much of a hard ass. Maybe, you know, these guys were recruited by, you know, Jim Mora Jr., and now they've got Chip Kelly, and they've never really fit in. You know, the square peg, round hole type thing. There's a lot of negativity surrounding the UCLA program in a lot of different facets. And that's how you get a game that goes from 17.5 to 18.5 or 19. And last week, money came in like a dam had been broken on Oklahoma against UCLA. So the market has officially isolated UCLA as a fade team. And keep in mind, what, 3 weeks ago, 4 weeks ago now, UCLA took money on the road in Cincinnati, taking on the Bearcats. Cincinnati covered the number, didn't play extremely well in that game, but still were the right side for most of it. What a difference a few data points makes, right? Now UCLA is a pure, no-holds-barred fade team. And Washington State could very well go out there and hang 50, 60 points on this team. And UCLA may not sustain drives, and Washington State may just roll over them. And that's what this line is suggesting. So the context of this line move is suggesting. And these are important things you can take a look at too, because again, small sample size of games, college football inherently, something of a high variance environment because you're betting on 18 to 22-year-old kids. Look at the context of the line move. You know, Kent State, how many games have they won the last few years? 5, 6, something like that combined? They're laying 11.5 against Bowling Green this week. This is a Kent State team that you couldn't lay a favorite price with a couple years ago or last year that you wouldn't even want to take as a small dog. Now they're getting bet up from 9.5 to 11.5. And again, I don't know if that game wins. I don't know if Kent State is the right side. But you want to get into the psychology of the betting market and of the people that massage and manipulate and move these lines. Even if you're not well-versed in the personnel, even if you don't do power ratings, if it's just not for you, you can look at the context of the betting market and get a feel for what's going on out there. And that'll shed some light on the teams that should be the right sides. And again, it doesn't always work out that way. You know, the sharpest of the sharp, 55-56% long term. But these should be the right sides. And again, yeah, there's some line value questions in play and things of that sort. But look at the psychology of the betting market, not just in college football, not just in the NFL, but in all of these sports. Again, like we talked about yesterday's show, the modeling crowd, the purely stats-based crowd, gets the first shots in the market, the first shots in the immature market. As the market starts to take shape, the handicapping crowd comes in. And then as we get closer to the weekend, we get plays based on injuries, or, you know, we get plays based on model tweaks or handicappers, or, you know, in the NFL, overwhelming public action coming in that can move a line if there's nothing sharp on the other side. Timing and philosophy, two very important things to consider when you're looking at the odds screen and looking at the betting market on a daily or a weekly basis. Coming up on our Friday edition of Bang the Book Radio, I'll give you my thoughts for week three of the Westgate Super Contest, as well as the Circa Million. I can tell you right now, my thoughts are all over the place because this card is not very good, but I'll do the best I can to bring you some insight and analysis on tomorrow's show. We'll also chat with Brent, the head risk manager down at DSI Sportsbook, for this week's version of the odds report, highlighting sharp money in both the college football and the NFL betting markets. That'll do it for me. Thank you so much for listening, everybody, and I will talk to you again tomorrow.